we could fly.
Welcome to this new season of the Have a Cup of Jahani podcast. So I want to title this new season that I'm embarking on with I'm Growing. So this is going to be the season of growth. And that's what I'm going to share with you throughout this season. So I thank you for coming over here and sitting with me. And I hope you enjoy. All right. So now let's talk about what's happening in Ukraine. And I'm going to do something similar as to what I did in the last episode. And as you know, I'm from the Dominican Republic and we used to go to Boca Chica quite a lot. And I used to make some very crude looking sandcastles. Not my best work, but you know. And as it was, my older sister, she would come from swimming and come back to shore and try to take over my castle, which I created. And I put a lot of hard work and effort, you know, using the little plastic cups and putting one mound over the other to make it really, really high. And she would try to come in and say, well, this part is mine. And I'm like, no, it's not. I made the whole thing. You know, I put in all that work. I put in all the effort. No, you're not going to take that even like the little quarter of it on the corner. No, this is a little similar to what we see happening in the Ukraine. Ukraine has this territory. This is their country. They are self-governing, have enacted laws. They have their own freedom. You know, this is their castle. This is their country. They want to own it. They want to make the rules, the laws for it and live that way. And then here comes the big bad Russia and says, well, no, actually, this little piece of it is mine and I need to control that piece. Oh, and then this other little piece is also mine when I need to control it. Oh, I know, by the way, you know what? I think this whole thing is actually mine and I should be the one controlling it because you cannot. That's what's happening there. So the people of Ukraine have said, no, you don't get to just come from your own country and try to take this one. Just because you feel like you want it or you want to become bigger or you want to amass more land or more people to boss around, things of that nature. No, you don't get to do that. So we're going to fight back. Many people around the world are trying to help and give their support to Ukraine so that way they can feel safe again in their land, their country, and make their own decisions, just like how anyone would want to make their own decisions. We have seen in the news the resiliency of the Ukrainian people quite a lot and how they have this steadfastness to stand for their truth and what they deem to be their right, their freedom. So, and that's what you see a lot and you have seen at the beginning. I believe the coverage now has waned a little bit. The Gaza humanitarian crisis is taking over a lot of the feed. And remember, don't take that as if one thing is more important than the other. I just think that there's so many different things going on in the world that the media is going to go for what is more sensational and what can get more clicks or what can get more audience to tune in and watch. So that's why sometimes you see certain things kind of like evaporating per se from the news cycle, but the crisis is still there. Our short attention span have drawn a limit and now we're on to the next new thing. But that's why it's so important to kind of stay tuned in and dive into things through a fresh lens as opposed to the media lens, if one can avoid it, because sometimes, you know, everybody is going to throw in their little bias in there whenever they report things. I don't care what they say of how unbiased there may be. I remember I used to, and I still do, right? I still go through the percentages of the media in the ranking based on most biased to least biased. And I try to stick with the least biased one because I just don't want somebody inserting their opinion in there, clouding my train of thought. I want to be able to think freely. At the end of the day, we all human beings, even when I tell you something through this podcast, I'm doing it through my filter of lived experience. And that's going to, in turn, give it a bias that is very Johnny leaning. And you may see that it's different from you and how you view the world because your experiences are different than mine. And one is not more valid than the other. It's just what it is, right? We have different experiences. So yeah, so be aware of that and always seek out a different perspective so that way you can draw from the masses and really mold your own perception of things that are going on. So the latest developments right now, and we're gonna Google together, people. I'm in the United States Institute of Peace.org, and it is the super cool website, by the way, that I'm gonna use a little bit more so that way I can find more things here. Ooh, listen to this. Diplomacy may not be as dead as it seems, dated January 9, 2024 by A. West Mitchell, PhD. All right. The Ukraine war has revealed some unexpected things about the nature of modern warfare that could profoundly reshape how states think about and practice diplomacy. The very attributes that make the war so terrible, its brutality, intractability, and immense expense in lives and treasure, may also paradoxically lead states to attach renewed importance to diplomacy in the years ahead. Yes, yes. I don't understand why it takes what's happening in Ukraine, what's happening in Gaza, what's happening in all these other places for people to say, you know what? Diplomacy is such a great thing. Diplomacy has always been a great thing and is one of those governmental powers that should be used the most. And the least power that should be used is force. Here we go. I'll keep reading. For starters, the fighting in Ukraine suggests that military force is not at present a terribly effective instrument for achieving political outcomes. No. Sherlock. As a 19th century Prussian strategist, Karl von Clausewitz famously observed, the ability to deliver such outcomes lies at the very heart of war's purpose. When states can achieve their ends through decisive force at a reasonable and tolerable cost, they are likely to favor war as an instrument of policy. When they cannot, they're more likely to consider other means to achieve their ends. I see. Okay, but going back to Ukraine, Russian leaders and even some senior U.S. officials appear to have believed that the war would be short, yes, sharp and decisive in Russia's favor, but that hasn't been the case. Damn right it hasn't been the case. Yes, despite possessing superior number of firepower and significantly larger population and industrial base, Russia has so far been unable to impose its will on Ukraine. And you know what? Once again, I'm not the smartest person when it comes to this, but I think really that it was the Ukraine's president's leadership that really brought his country, his entire country, to follow him. I mean, here is this person that was like, no, I'm not going to go high. I'm going to lead my people to fight back because our win is just as important to me as it is to them. You see what I'm saying? So this right here, this is like, shoot, what you see in those movies of knighthood that the West society puts in movies in Hollywood quite a lot, and something that we have been taught that this is good, that this is great. I would say it was the president's leadership that really changed the outcome. Because yes, at the beginning when all of this happened, right, we all was like, for sure, you know, Russia will overpower this small country. And when you look at it in paper, everything makes sense as to why it would unfold in that manner. But it didn't. And I think the key to this is the leadership that Ukraine has that is vastly different from the one in Russia. And in Ukraine, you have people that look up, as far as I know, right? I mean, I'm just an outsider when it comes to all these things happening because I'm not there and I haven't studied this at length. People get degrees when it comes to this kind of stuff, right? I just read books here and there so that way I can learn more. When you actually dig deeper, you note that difference. And then to me, that's what stands out. And I think that's why the tables turned when it comes to this conflict and why the tables turned in favor of Ukraine, just because that president was able to motivate and influence his population to follow him and fight back for their freedom. And when I just said that, I just kind of like envisioned somebody throwing up a sword and going, follow me, take the hill. And the article goes on to say, well, it's too early to draw sweeping conclusions, just like I did. I told you I'm not an expert in this. It certainly seems that the defensive has the upper hand on this modern battlefield. And let me see what they say. They probably have like a completely different opinion than me. Okay, so they're saying that this may have to do partly with Ukraine's geography, which complicates wide-scale offensives. There you go, right? Of course they're going to know their territory, their land features way better than an outsider. And that always goes in favor, right? When you fight on your home turf. But as a number of military analysts have observed, it may also have to do with the nature of current military technologies, which by easing the identification and targeting of attackers tend to penalize movement on the modern battlefield. Okay. Oh, look, and this right here, see, political scientists, see these people, this all that they do, that they know. Political scientists have long observed the positive correlation between the primacy of the offensive and the likelihood of conflict. As MIT political scientist Stephen Van Evera put it memorably, war is more likely when conquest is easy. Ah, you see, what we talked about, the 19th century Prussian strategist said the same thing, that if we know it's easy, we're going to go for force as opposed to diplomacy. When we know it's hard, we're going to go for diplomacy. But I think that has backfired, right? The course of the war to date suggests that countries inclined to attack their neighbors will, as a matter of prudence, have to think at least as hard about how they plan to end and exit a conflict as they do about how to start one. You have to have an exit strategy. Yes. Second, and relatedly, the war's progress today casts doubts on the potential of nuclear weapons to help aggressors out of this predicament. Despite possessing the largest destructive arsenal in the world and famously devising strategies of nuclear escalation to win a war, Russia has so far failed to translate its status as a nuclear power into an advantage in the war. And this is a good thing, folks. So far, Russia's leaders have not found a convincing strategic benefit to utilizing a nuclear weapon against either a civilian or a military target in Ukraine. And considering that the Russia state appears to be straining every other nerve to win the war, that's saying a lot. Even if Russia decides to use a nuclear weapon in Ukraine, it's not clear that doing so would change Ukraine's will to resist. That's right. In this sense, the war supports longstanding contention that nuclear weapons are poor instruments for coercion. There you go. Say that thing loud. In the late U.S. economist and novel laureate Thomas Schelling's famous formulation, they lend themselves much more readily to deterrence than to compellence. Or using threats of force to coerce an opponent to change its behavior. Possessing nuclear weapons doesn't necessarily make their owner more likely to succeed in convincing a victim to surrender its sovereignty, or for that matter, stop a friendly onlooker from helping the victim. If aggressors can't easily achieve their objectives by conventional force, and nuclear weapons don't provide much help in breaking through the resulting stalemate, then eventually they're likely to look to other means to achieve their ends. You may be asking yourself, okay, why does Russia want that piece of territory that is in Ukraine or Ukraine itself? Why? Well, at least I'm asking myself that.
So it's a little bit of everything. And I would say that you really don't know unless you're that leader, right? And you're the one going after that. You understand what is either the main reason or the sole reason as to why. But there are certain things that may be tied into this decision of going after or having this interest in Ukraine. Some of it may be the historical ties and identity. Ukraine and Russia, they have intertwined histories. They trace cultural and historical roots. Moscow often views Ukraine as part of its cultural and historical sphere. Then you have, this is something that I'm more in tune with, the strategic importance of it, which is Ukraine has a strategic value. Let's look at the map here, right? It's all about strategy, people. So map, I'm Googling it. I want to say it's mostly that. But once again, right, I'm not like a political science major or anything like that. But here it is. So I am in visualcapitalist.com, and they have this amazing map explainer when it comes to Ukraine. And here you can see that they hold a significant strategic value because of where they're located geographically in the map. So basically, Ukraine is the buffer between Russia and then the other countries, the other NATO countries there in Eastern Europe. And that's big, but it also has other things tied to that motivating factor as to why they want Ukraine so bad. And it may be something that has to do with the things that Ukraine has, the economic things. If Russia takes over, then they will have it, such as coals, minerals, fertile land, that it makes it an attractive asset to have. And its energy transit routes as well, it will be crucial, right? It will be like something that will be really good for gas exports into Europe. And it's also power, you know, like if they expand, if Russia expands into Eastern Europe, just like I said, right, the way that is placed on the map, that means that it's no buffer there between NATO and Russia. It's just Russia right there. They don't have that buffer of Ukraine. It's a big deal. Now, looking at this map, it really brings it all together that if they assert that control over Ukraine, it's Russia projecting power in that region and globally as well, which is a big deal, folks. And like I said, you can go to visualcapitalist.com, map explainer, Ukraine. And right here, they have all of that, the conflict zone. They have agricultural land, the natural gas transit through Ukraine, that, remember, if they have it, boom, they're in there like swimwear. And like I said, despite the challenges that Ukraine and the Ukrainian people have gone through thus far, their resiliency has shined through it all. And you may have seen in the news and in social media the stories of hope, perseverance, and community support that really paints a picture of that unyielding, we are not giving up spirit of the Ukrainian people. And they're supporting one another and defending their sovereignty, their right to be there, their right to have other countries, their own laws, their own regulations, and so forth. But what does the future hold for them? I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball, right? But we don't really know. But hopefully it's a resolution towards peace and stability, that hopefully we get there through more diplomatic efforts and internal reforms and international support, right, from the international community. But it is clear. And like I said at the beginning of this episode, don't get confused because of the decreasing amount of headlines when it comes to Ukraine. Their journey is not over. It's far from it. And the road ahead, it's just like the various conflicts around the world, is just filled with challenges. But the good thing is that the people there are still filled with that resiliency, which really gives me hope that there's potential for a positive turnout when it comes to this. But we can all play a part in supporting Ukraine quests for peace and prosperity. And we can do that through humanitarian aid, through support, through emphasizing what's going on there. And while the news media may not keep them on the headline, we can continue to do so through our own small platforms, as small as they may be. But thank you for joining me in this bit of a research excavation into Ukraine. And I hope you continue to dig deeper into these subjects that we have opened up together, and you continue to evolve when it comes to the knowledge on these subjects, and evolve when it comes to your opinion on these subjects, as well as you identify new pieces of information and you just filter it through your experiences, so that way you can come up with an objective yet solely you opinion. And I'll leave you with that. See you on the next episode. Bye. Oh, we could fly. Thank you so much for listening. I want to hear from you. Leave me a comment. Do a rating if you can on the podcast. Share it with somebody you love. But most importantly, come back. See you next time. Bye. Are you ready to embark on a captivating journey of resilience and revelation? Get ready to immerse yourself in the extraordinary world of Isla Delgado, a 9-year-old girl who has experienced more than her fair share of trauma. Isla's life takes a dramatic turn when she's forced to live with her dad and his new wife for 6 months. Her anxiety intensifies as she becomes convinced that her stepmom is an evil witch. But Isla is determined to protect herself and expose her stepmom's true nature. As the gripping story unfolds, Isla discovers that things aren't always as they seem. Join her on a transformative journey of self-discovery, where she learns that even the most traumatic experiences can be triumphantly overcome with the power of love and understanding. People are saying, while the alarming trend of attempting to ban books continues in the United States, this book is a fantastic reminder of the power that books have. A child will read this story and feel seen, heard, and hopefully feel some peace. For children of the appropriate age, this book provides the opportunity for a wonderful exercise in empathy. The message of the story is truly something a lot of children out there, and even some adults, might need to hear. Mrs. Franchi's Evil Ring and the 6 Months That Changed Everything is a heartwarming tale that explores the profound theme of family, trust, and the power of compassion. This inspiring story will leave listeners of all ages feeling uplifted and inspired. Don't miss out on this middle grade read and be prepared to be captivated by a story that will touch your heart and ignite your imagination. Mrs. Franchi's Evil Ring is available everywhere books are sold.